You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA. You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 472 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you in separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Which included number 72, Michael Bennett. It is the Michael Bennett episode of the podcast. Did you see this on social media?
You didn't say what it is, so I can't answer that question.
Well, you know, it's dramatic. If you pause it dramatically for effect. You were just supposed to read my mind about what. So I believe this was Pagliacci, not Lil Woody's, that posted this. But the teaser that this year their collab, it seems to involve a burger wrapped in a slice of pizza.
I'm sorry, what?
I might need to clip that video. You did the blinking guy gif.
I do not know what you're saying.
A burger wrapped in a slice of pizza.
But this is a Lil Woody's Burger Month burger, or?
Well, this is going to be annually. There's a collaboration, so Pagliacci does Pagliacci does the Lil Woody's cheeseburger special. Uh-huh. Where there's meat and pickles and fry sauce and things of that nature.
So they're just onions. Giving them pizzas to make.
I don't know
burgers?
Exactly. It was just a tease. All I know is
what
I saw.
That? Stop the podcast.
Okay.
No, don't actually.
That is way too much.
If we stopped the podcast every time I pulled up Instagram or whatever, we would never podcast.
That is way too much editing. That's funny because it was linked on the Discord complaining about that I had time enough to like it on Instagram, but not to post it. But then there wasn't actually a link to the actual post. So I cannot get it from there and send it to you. I'm going to have to go directly to Instagram and seek it out. But you couldn't totally see.
I hate doing
see.
Daytime podcasts because I get so distracted by work.
Well,
I didn't in this scenario. I'm just noting.
Cool story, bro.
Just a sneak peek. I don't know if that's what that is.
You don't think that's what that is? Because it is a viral trend, isn't it?
Of burgers inside pizzas?
Not necessarily burgers. I think there was a Philadelphia thing where it was a cheese steak wrapped inside a slice from a nearby location. And that was a thing.
I'm not 100% convinced. I'll eat it. The annoying thing about the Lil Woody's burgers is the worst part of every burger is always the burger.
It's not inaccurate to say that, but
I think I would eat this, though.
Of course you would eat that. What do you mean?
When is this coming? It has to be pretty soon. Oh, Pagliacci pizza seasonals drop July 10th. Wow, we get college football and the Pagliacci seasonal on the same day? College football is the next day, but obviously playing it early.
Yes.
Oh, so the Pagliacci seasonals drop July 10th. So that's when they're going to have the burger pizza.
Presumably.
And then July 29th is when we get the pizza burger.
Is that what it says?
It says Lil Woody's pizza burger starts week of 7/29.
Okay.
We're there not going to be in a kennel during this, right?
No, we will not. That's
we have
the weekend
to review
of Seafair.
These. I haven't been to Lil Woody's in forever.
I haven't been to Lil Woody's in a couple of weeks. I haven't had a Lil Woody's since Thursday.
Oh, I could see them. So they have the pizza in the video. It's kind of like a sheet. Like, it looks like Grandma and Grandpa style. It's like a sheet of pizza. If you watch it, this is like the whole beginning of the episode. Just go listen to the end part first. Come back here in like 40 minutes. Okay. Anyway.
So there you go. It's been literally since Thursday that I've had Lil Woody's. All right, well, should we get into the toasts? Because we got a lot of
absolutely.
Them. It's oops, all toasts.
Were that was true. I know you're sneaking the Sounders in here.
I mean, they're going to be mentioned. Yeah, they're in the toast though.
Okay.
First off, congrats to Cal Raleigh, who is the AL Player of the Month for June. An obvious choice here. Cal Raleigh continuing his domination well into July here, and he's now up to 35 home runs on the season. We could see him head to head with Aaron Judge this week, but we know who the real MVP has been in the American League thus far. Forget the war. Congrats to Andrés Muñoz, Julio Rodríguez, and Brian Wu, selected as reserves for the AL All-Star team. The four Mariners All-Stars ties the most since 2003. They previously had four in both 2014 and 2018. Would you care to guess the All-Stars in 2014 and 2018?
Oh my God.
There was someone in here where I was like,
Felix
oh.
is in, was Felix in 2018?
I'd have to go. I'm have to go pull that up again.
I'm guessing Felix is in both.
There was someone I was like, wow, I know these two players played for the Mariners, but I kind of thought they got traded for each other, and I did not realize that they played together.
Not able to get my freaking stream to work for the Mariners. Is it blacked out or something? What is going on?
I can't tell you that. Felix was picked in 2014, but not in 2018.
They had four All-Stars in 2018.
Yes. Is
Haniger?
in 2018 a 5.55 ERA. Haniger is correct.
But that's the first one that I have so far.
For 2018, yes.
Ooh. We're gonna take all day for me doing this.
Well, I mean, you should at least be able to get.
Ichiro's 2014.
No, Ichiro was not with the team in 2014.
Really?
I mean, you're missing one fairly obvious
Seager?
2014. Seager, yes. But the fairly obvious 2014 is someone who is relatively new to the franchise at this point.
You're
That's,
Cano.
yes.
So
And
it's
then the
Cano, Seager, Felix,
both
and
years, both 2014 and 2018 is in 2025, the Mariners had their closer selected for the All-Star
that's what I
game.
was trying to remember who the closer was. Was it Fernando Rodney?
It was the Fernando Rodney experience in 2018.
Was what's his name? Edwin Diaz?
Correct.
Okay.
So you're 2-4 on, you've now got all four in 2014. You've got 2-4 in
Was
2018.
Cruz?
Yes, obviously Nelson
Okay.
Cruz. And
That's
then the last one is
what
the
position?
shortstop.
Shortstop. Well, Jean Segura, no. He was traded,
Yes,
right?
it was
It
Jean
was Jean
Segura.
Segura.
That was the one
Wow.
where I was like, well, I knew that him and Haniger, he played for the Mariners, but I had no idea he and Haniger
I kind
played
of thought, yeah,
together
they got
for
traded
the Mariners.
together literally to the Mariners.
Oh, did okay. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. All
In a
right.
trade that maybe would redo now.
A lot happened on all sides. All right, congrats to Skylar Diggins and Gabby Williams, chosen as WNBA All-Star reserves. Storm have had three All-Stars four times before, most recently in 2022. It's the first All-Star appearance for Gabby Williams. Very exciting. And Skylar Diggins, first time in the All-Star game since 2022 before she gave birth to her second child. So, an awesome and well-deserved honor. No real surprise here that both of them made it. All right, congrats to UW freshman JJ Mandiquit, who helped the USA to gold in the FIBA U19 Men's World Cup on Sunday over fellow freshman Hannes Steinbach in Germany. Mandiquit's play off the bench was credited for the USA pulling away in their eventual 109-76 win. The US was plus 19 in Mandiquit's 17-25 of action. He had 7 points in a team-high six assists and was eighth overall in the tournament with 5.4 assists per game. Steinbach had a team-high 19 points on 8 of 14 shooting in the final, finished 8th in scoring at 17.4 points per game, 2nd in rebounding at 13 rebounds per game, added 1.5 blocks per game. So, no surprise, the run fell short of gold against a much deeper USA squad, but still impressive stuff
How
from
good
Hannes
is JJ
Steinbach.
Mandiquit, by the way?
He's good. He's good enough to be on this team. He's like, I think a four-star level prospect overall.
Like what should we be expecting from him as far as the rotation?
It's interesting because, Vazumana Diallo probably is going to play more point guard, you would think, after the recent Desmond Claude addition to the UW backcourt. And then you've got Kwamari Peterson at point guard as well. So it might be tough for Mandiquit to get a lot of minutes as a freshman, but he should be capable of playing minutes as a freshman. I mean, he would be UW's like best incoming freshman, I would say. Like Wesley Yates was rated higher than him, but didn't play. I guess I don't know. He's in the same ballpark as Diallo, I guess.
What team do you look forward to cheering for him on in 2026?
I you
Or I
know,
guess 2027 mostly,
maybe he
right?
will carve out a
Oklahoma, Texas A&M.
maybe he will carve out a spot on the roster, you know, in the rotation, despite these things working against him. But I mean, yeah, 4-star recruit, number 11 point guard according to ESPN. So
Where is he
I mean,
from? Honolulu.
Hawaii,
Okay, yeah. So maybe
prepped in
USC.
Utah.
That makes a lot of sense. He'll be at USC in 2027.
Okay. He's gonna go the opposite direction. All right. Well, speaking of the Sounders, congrats to Stephen Fry, who recorded his 1,000th career save on Sunday, joining Nick Raimondo as the second goalkeeper to reach that milestone in MLS history. A highlight on a day that ended poorly for Stephen Fry from a health standpoint. We'll talk about that later in the pod in the roundup. And lastly, this week we are remembering Dr. Charles H. Mitchell, who passed away last month at age 85. Mitchell played football at Garfield and UW, earning induction to the Husky Hall of Fame in 1992. As a running back and kick returner, Mitchell helped the Huskies win the Rose Bowl in 1962, earned all PCC honors in both 61 and 62. After playing in the AFL for 6 seasons, Mitchell taught at and was president of Seattle Central College, in addition to later serving as chancellor of the Seattle Community College District. Unfortunately, Mitchell was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2014 and suffered dementia in his later years. But you know, incredible career both on the field and in academia for Dr. Charles H. Mitchell. All right, with that, it is time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
As there were bombs bursting in air over the weekend, do you want to know what was not bursting in air? That's right, the bats of the Pittsburgh Pirates. They looked like they were playing Roman candle baseball because of the flames the Mariners aces were throwing, and it hit me. This weekend lit a fuse under the Mariners staff, and pitching is back on the menu in Seattle, boys. The five aces have returned, and they're like an M80 on the rest of the league. It has now been four full games, 80% of the way through the rotation, since a Mariners starter has given up a run. And you know that's going to continue tonight in the Bronx, and it has so far through 4 2/3, because the Yankees have been a dud recently. Evans, Wu, Castillo, Kirby, all blanks. And that is how this Mariners team overcomes the possibly cheating again, because I have no other explanation, Houston Astros. We're past the fourth, but after 90 games, the Mariners are finally the Mariners. If I had told you back in March that the Mariners swept the Pirates over the 4th of July weekend, you would have guessed that they snaked their way around the series with a total score of 8-0 and a pair of 1-0 shutouts. It's Mariners baseball, and we know it. We don't love it, but like a ground bloom flower, we're used to it. And this offense looks like the Mariners offense as well. Randy is lining up tanks. Cal is absolutely blasting mortars. Julio is snagging every bottle rocket hit to center. Canzone's hitting is as unpredictable and dangerous as a flying bee. This Mariners team right now, not to mention the thrilling grand finales being provided by Brash and Munoz, is how the Mariners win the AL West and series in the playoffs. It's five aces, timely hitting, the occasional smoke bomb, not necessarily throwing the whole bag of Poppets on the ground at once. So that night, sulfur in the air, as I was imagining the rest of the season, like a hot dog flying down from heaven. I reached up over the assembled children, snagging the parachute that was flying down from the sky, and said to them all, "The rest of this season is not going to be safe and sane."
If I recall correctly, there weren't a lot of smoke bombs during his time in Seattle, but you know, there were a lot were advertised.
Whose
Nothing.
time?
Justin Smoke.
Oh, I see. What are you? I barely named 2014 All-Stars.
Hey, actually had 66 home runs. Man, he played a lot of games here. Justin Smoke. Yeah, it was very much a throwback weekend because, you know, as recently as last week's pod, and when you were considering why are the Mariners not performing better than they are, given what Cal Raleigh is doing this season, given that they have, you know, an all-star closer, two all-stars on offense, one of those performing at, again, you know, a MVP conversation level at the very least. Like, how are they not better? And the reason was the starting pitching just hadn't been as good as we expected, in large part because of injuries, but it hadn't been there. And then last weekend, it was there in a big way. And let me tell you, there was, granted, I was north of the border for two-thirds of the series, but I am pretty confident there was no marine layer involved at T-Mobile Park last weekend. That was pure pitching. And George Kirby out-dueling Paul Skenes in a game where Skenes, like, completely dominates and ends up with a no decision. Like, it was a very, very satisfying conclusion to the Mariners' homestand, I would say. So, yeah, right. Emotions riding high heading into the series in Yankee Stadium, where they are currently scoreless as we are recording this in the top of the fifth.
I had to restart my computer to try to get my stream to work. It wasn't working.
Oh, okay.
I mean, basically, coming out of the Royals series, we're feeling fine. It wasn't, you know, like splitting that Royals series was not the best outcome. Logan Evans, however, I said last week about it was like Hancock needs to go at this point. It has to be Evans in the starting lineup. I think they were overthinking it. Or I think they were trying, they wanted something that they weren't going to get from Emerson Hancock. We'll see. I mean, he'll make more starts for the Mariners most likely. But at this point, any chance Emerson Hancock becoming at the same level as the rest of the rotation seems pretty unlikely. Logan Evans, however, with that shutout performance against the Royals, was kind of like, this is where he belongs right now. There's going to be times that he gets roughed up, sure, but I was feeling pretty good about it. And Randy Arozarena, to me, is the biggest revelation from it, though. Because, again, I talked about this like a month ago about like the Mariners need to get Julio going if they want to actually be competitors for, you know, winning the division. I will consistently have my words be marked. The Astros are going to go on a pretty significant slide at this point. Like, they are outplaying their fundamentals right now. A sweep against the Dodgers, it's just not going to continue. This division looks further out of reach than it actually is for the Mariners. But getting Randy going is kind of the same thing as getting Julio going, knowing that you have the ability to get them both hitting at the same time. But like, what Randy did over this home stretch was a little bit of a reminder, because he'd been, you need to have somebody behind Cal. Obviously, Cal's being walked a ton now, which makes sense. If you're in opposing pitchers and you're opposing managers, you're like, of course we're going to walk Cal as much as we can. You have to punish them in those situations. And I think the situation that was frustrating for me was the last loss that they had against the Royals, where they came up and there were opportunities for both Julio and Cal. Julio probably should have walked, but for Julio and Cal to have tied the game, and they didn't in those situations. And it was like, ugh, we have to make people pay if they're going to walk Cal. And that's what getting Randy going is doing. So I was pretty excited about that overall on this home stretch. And if Randy is even at 75% of where he was during this time period, it's going to be, and you know, even if Cal regresses a little, oh my God, it's pouring rain in this game. I've seen none of this.
Yet they continue playing.
It's hot here. How could it be cold raining there?
It's hot there. Fun fact. It's not that it's cold there. Yeah.
Yeah. The people that I work with in New York were talking about how gross it was. And I was like, ooh. Muggy weather is my least favorite weather. Anyway, the Randy home stretch, what Canzone is doing, like, things are looking pretty good. They know the grounds crew is like, they're just waiting to come on the field.
Just waiting for the signal. I mean, what I would say is, at some point, we have to concede that even though the Astros lost significant,
I love this
talent,
grounds crew guy just being like, are we good? Let's go, boys. Oh, yeah, that's good stuff. The count got to 2-1, and they're like, all right, that's it. Bring out the tarp. Oh, this is fun. Baseball's so fun. There's so much shit that we do in baseball that you just don't do in other sports that would make the sports more fun.
It's true.
Basketball's just like a rant. I don't know. I mean, it's your profession and all, but like, basketball's just not as much fun of a sport in many ways. The pageantry.
I would say some of it is needed to make up for the slog that baseball can be. But
nothing also will compare to minor league baseball.
Well, like, that's true. The Astros have a plus 69 run differential, third best in the AL.
Have like an 18-1 win this weekend? Like,
okay, those still count. I mean, that's still part of run differential. I I think at some point we have to concede that even though the Astros did not look that good on paper coming into the season, that the Astros are still, for whatever reason, very good. And that really the goal for the Mariners should be the top wild card spot.
You can concede that. I will not.
I mean, I don't know that it really matters from their standpoint, but just in terms of what I'm thinking, like that's a more realistic goal. Fangraphs has the Astros finishing on average with 92 and a half wins. You know, you can't pick
out. You're looking
at
this when they're at the high point, though, and I've warned about this. You don't just be like, oh, things are going well. What were the Mariners when they were 10 games up? I know you don't remember that.
Fangraphs understands the possibility of regression to the mean. I don't know if you're aware of that. They factor that in. That's part of the projection.
It does fluctuate based upon how you're doing, like where your record is at currently.
Nobody,
fluctuates.
Of course, because they bank those wins, buddy.
Yes.
Nobody in the AL East is projected for 90 wins on average. And even though, you know, the Blue Jays and Yankees are both, you know, a couple games ahead of where the Mariners are projected at 86.1, the thing is, one of those teams is going to get hot and win the division. And then the other one is the one you're going to be competing with. So, you know, the odds are the team that is the wild card is going to underperform that projection a little bit. And you're going to be right in that ballpark, which makes this an important series for the Mariners.
You're talking about second place in the AL East?
Correct.
I agree. I mean, obviously the series...
And the Yankees... I'm sorry, not the Yankees. The Blue Jays are the team you got to be looking at. Like, they're the team that's out over their skis. They're 53-38 with a plus 16 run differential that's worse than the Mariners. And have won 9 in a row to your... They've peaked.
Oh, yeah. No, I would say the same thing about the Blue Jays. I'm not paying attention to the Blue Jays, but, like, I would say the same thing about the Blue Jays that I'm saying about the Astros. Did you see the ESPN post today with potential trade?
The Ronald Acuna Jr. trade packages? Yes. So they had the Mariners having the most attractive package with Bryce Miller, who, you know, I forgot to put this in the notes, but I believe recently did throw at least a little bit. So he's making some progress in his rehab. Harry Ford, Lazaro Montes, I forget who else was in there. Do you have the full list?
Cole Emerson.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
And then one more prospect who I was less familiar with.
And again, they found that the most attractive possible Acuna.
Brandon package. Garcia. I was thinking about this, and I was wondering if, basically, if you had a similar package, this is, I don't know how Mariners fans would feel about it. I think you really fall in love with your guys. You know, we fall in love with prospects so much. And the idea of a prospect that is in your organization who becomes successful with another organization hurts more than the success on the field that you have from the player that you would have received, if that makes sense. Because save for, like I was saying about Mitch Haniger and Gene Segura. Mitch Haniger and Gene Segura were both All-Stars in the same season. Like, the team was better because of that. But the Mariners didn't win a World Series, didn't win a playoff series, didn't even make the playoffs that year. And so because of that, I'm like, well, if we had Ketel Marte, you know, like, you look at it that, like, the magnitude is even higher. The thing that we don't factor in is draft picks. And I do think this third draft pick that the Mariners have is, I don't know if they can you trade draft picks in baseball? Do you know?
I believe you now can. Because in previewing the draft, I read a reference to them potentially trading down.
Having that draft pick as a possible trade piece. See, I don't know how much teams are actually scouting the players at the top or having those conversations, but it is an interesting one because that person is going to instantly become a top 20 prospect in baseball. People can avoid it or whatever, but I've looked back at like the number 3 pick for years and they are almost always, I mean, many of them are in the majors. People go to the majors very fast now, or they're going to be a top 20 prospect. If you look at, say, like the last 3 years, something like that. Having that piece in the organization, I think does make it, either it makes somebody like Cole Emerson, I don't know if they're really looking at shortstops necessarily, but it makes these players a little bit more expendable, or it's another piece that could be used in this trade. Because imagine you take out Cole Emerson, right? And it's the rest of that package, but it's the number 3 pick in the draft. Could that be more enticing to the Braves to be able to do it? I don't think they're going to trade Ronald Acuna either anyway.
Right. That's the real thing.
Acuna on a 2.5 seasons at $17 million, like, it at $17 million, even Bobby Witt becomes really expensive in not that long. So if, and his ability to, Ronald Acuna could be the best hitter in baseball. and the chances of any of these players getting there. Obviously, it's a lot, but I was just like, I think you probably do basically anything if somebody like Acuna is possibly on the table.
I don't know about anything, but
it's the most Mariners situation possible because you pay in prospects, you pay in future value, but they're not having to pay money. And that is the one thing that we know the Mariners don't like to spend or like to do is pay in money. And so like the team control for multiple seasons, it's just not a very Braves move. You know, like the Braves don't, I don't see them moving on for like, I think Skeens is more likely to be traded than Acuna.
And they also included Byron Buxton in that, but I assume Buxton is slightly less valuable than the Mariners since so much of his value is tied to his defense in center field, and the Mariners are also already pretty good there.
Yeah. I liked it, though, thinking about the Mariners, seeing a player who's kind of like team-controlled, lower salary, superstar player, and I was like...
This fits.
They don't have... They went out and got Randy Rosarena. They developed Cal. They developed Julio. They're never going to sign a Ronald Acuna level player.
No.
So this is their opportunity. I don't know if he's available actually, but like if the Braves are willing to have a conversation, I think you have to do basically I think Miller is the perfect level of starter if they have to include a starter. It's like you already have a starting pitcher with injury concerns. Like that's, I think we're probably fine to move on from him, and the depth is okay, but like there's a price, but I do think that the Mariners have to do basically anything to
would
try
you
to
include
go find
Kirby?
Player. No, I would. I think if it's the prospects plus not Wu or Kirby, or I mean, they wouldn't trade Gilbert, but like I'd trade Logan Evans.
Yeah, I don't think that's the question here.
If you trade one of Kirby, Gilbert, or Wu, you're probably limiting your major. You don't want to limit your major league upside.
Right.
And Miller doesn't limit their major league upside because if you're trading for Acuna, you're sacrificing something from the future with those players. But I do think that number three pick is it's a hugely valuable piece that the Mariners have. And I'm like, could they include that in a trade package? I think it'd be pretty enticing to people.
So the MLB draft is Sunday. The number three pick via moving up in the lottery substantially from they were set to pick in the middle of the round. Mariners considering 7 to 8 prospects. Their vice president of amateur scouting, Scott Hunter, told Adam Judah, the Seattle Times. The three college left-handed pitchers are considered the top prospects in the draft. That's Cade Anderson of LSU, Florida State's Jamie Arnold, and Tennessee's Liam Doyle, who is very amusing to me because I have a close friend named Liam Doyle. Who is not a dominant college pitcher, for the record. The top college hitter, perhaps, UW transfer Ava Arquette, a shortstop who finished his career at Oregon State, going to the College World Series this year after 2 years on Montlake, considered another likely Mariners pick. People love doing that in mock drafts because you get to say stays in the Northwest, etc. Seth Hernandez from Corona, California, considered the top prep pitcher. And then Ethan Holliday, the brother of Jackson and son of Matt.
I am so all in on Holliday. If he is there at three and they don't take him, I'm going to be very pissed.
Well, you know who picks after the Mariners, right?
No, who picks after them?
The Colorado Rockies.
Oh, who could pair him with? He like grew up there, Matt Holliday?
Yeah.
Is Matt Holliday, do they still live there?
That's asking a lot of me. I'm just pleased that I remember that Matt Holliday was a major league player.
I want them to try. Holliday's obviously the most talented of the players in this draft.
I don't know if I'd say he is obviously the most talented.
And I'm like pretty extreme on the opposite end of people who have successful siblings. It's a good path to take. I'm not talking about myself. But
or are you talking about me?
Siblings.
My brother is an MVP.
That's true. I've been waiting for you to step your game up.
Well, you know, you forced me to a couple weeks ago when you took over the rundown, because let's get into it.
The Seattle Kraken. Like, this could be exciting, whoever they draft. It is going to be exciting having a fun new prospect.
For sure. perhaps for a matter of weeks if you have anything to do with it. Seattle Kraken re-signed forward Ty Cartier to a two-year deal ahead of the arbitration deadline for restricted free agents, while Kaapo Kakko did not strike a deal and filed for arbitration. It's rare for NHL contracts for restricted free agents to actually reach arbitration. Per Kate Shefty of the Seattle Times, just one of 14 players who filed last year actually went to arbitration. You obviously can still strike a deal right up until that date, which will be later this month. The Kraken's other restricted free agent, defenseman Ryker Evans, is not arbitration eligible. One other little Kraken note, Colorado Avalanche hired the inaugural Kraken head coach Dave Hackstall as an assistant coach. Seattle Sounders. Paul Rothrock, equalized just before halftime after Diego Rossi gave the Crew a 1-0 lead, and the team shared the points in a match that ended in ugly fashion with a Stefan Fry head injury and stoppage time. Fry was taken to the hospital via ambulance for evaluation, but thankfully was able to return home that evening. He's in concussion protocol, but apparently avoided further injury beyond that and was able to visit teammates at practice on Tuesday. So at the end of this match, Columbus could have taken a corner, with the Sounders apparently needing to put an outfield player in goal for that corner, but Crew coach Wilfried Nancy volunteered to end the match, which had surpassed the minimum amount of stoppage time. Sounders did have the slight XG edge in this one, 1.3 to 0.8, and they would have also had only 9 players, I guess, on the pitch, because for a third consecutive match, the Sounders had a defender issued a red card, this time Kalani Kosa-Rienzi, earlier in stoppage time.
Sounders could draft Xavier Nayens with their second pick, because they have it, like...
the compensatory pick at number 35?
Yeah, I mean, there's a good chance or whatever that he it is could now. Be there.
Who?
Which would be pretty interesting. Xavier Nayens, who's from Mount Vernon.
Oh, yeah.
It would be very, very fun if they drafted a Northwest player. What time? You said this on Sunday?
Yes. What time?
Do you know what time?
MLB
is it on
draft?
TV? It's on the MLB Network? I'm probably going to be at Children's Baseball. But if I can't, I am going to, for the first time ever, watch the MLB draft.
Televised on MLB Network and ESPN starting at 3 p.m. Pacific on Sunday.
Let me see how badly Luca has to do.
Some other unfortunate injury news for the Sounders. João Paulo suffered an ACL tear in training, previously suffered the same injury in the 2022 CONCACAF Champions League final, returning at the start of the following season. João Paulo already was kind of being phased out by the Sounders. Sadly, this might end the spell the end of his time in Seattle, which has been very successful. Speaking of midfielders, Sounders negotiating an extension with Obed Vargas that would utilize their U22 initiative spot per Andrew Wiebe and Sounder at Heart. That wouldn't prevent a sale this summer, certainly, but would strengthen the Sounders negotiating position in that event. Sounder at Heart reported further that Vargas prefers going to Europe despite interest in him from Liga MX and specifically Tigres, obviously valuable to them, is a Mexico international. After an extended homestand, including the Club World Cup, the Sounders now head on the road this weekend to face Sporting Kansas City on Saturday night. Sporting KC 3 points below the playoff line thus far with a -5 goal differential. Seattle Storm won their first two games of a three-game East Coast swing to wrap up the trip Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific time in a camp day matchup at Connecticut. It is that time of year with the early starts. Both of those wins came over teams in the middle of a pileup from second to fifth in the WNBA standings that includes the Storm, suddenly in much more favorable position. They've got a 2-0 lead in the season series over the New York Liberty. On Thursday night, at Atlanta, Skylar Diggins had the game-winning layup to close an unlikely Storm comeback. And then they dominated the second half of a 79-70 win at the Liberty on Sunday. A game that was really, like, they were already leading, you know, had already played well during the third quarter when they outscored New York 22-6. But really the standout here was the performance of Dominique Malunga, who did not play at all in the first half after a rough outing at Atlanta. She played only 2 minutes. This was another game where Noel Quinn really cut down the rotation to the 7 players that she trusts off the bench. But Malunga got a shot in the second half on Sunday and showed every reason why she was the number 2 pick of this year's draft. Played 10 minutes, had 11 points on 5 of 7 shooting, 8 rebounds, defended Brianna Stewart, was just unstoppable in the paint. And Completely flipped this game on its head at a period of time where New York was trying to come back. So it was a pretty thrilling outcome here for the Storm, above and beyond, I would say, the win.
I'm so mad that I didn't watch this. Like, this was the game, right? This is
Yeah,
the Belonga coming out party.
I mean, she's had a couple of these, certainly. I would say that, her performance against Vegas, where she helped turn the game in the slowdown of Vegas, comeback in the second half of the Storm's first win over the Aces, was also quite impressive. So these flashes have been there, but this, I would say, was the most dominant, certainly. They were playing through her in the post, and it was also exciting to see a nice game for Ezzie Magbegor. That was one of the challenges, as they were sort of alternating at center in the second half. They did play a little bit together, but Ezzie Magbegor, I think one of the things we highlighted early on was her struggles at the free throw line. And after a season where she shot nearly 90%, that she had already missed more free throws in 2025, through the first month of the season, and all of a sudden she started to make her free throws again, and that was probably the best that she's looked. So this was just a very exciting performance all around. I mean, Malunga did have 11 points before, but that was against Connecticut, and a lot of garbage time where she played nearly 20 minutes, the most that she's played in any game. To have 11 points in 10 minutes and to do it as efficiently as she did, I mean, it was just very exciting
The
stuff.
8 rebounds too in 10 minutes.
Yes. For a team that struggles on the glass, that's important.
It is criminal for her not to be playing more minutes at this point. Like, they should start from the perspective of, I get that they've eased her in a little bit. There are 19 games in the season. She is clearly the type of player who should be 20, playing 20 minutes a game.
I don't know if I'd say 20 minutes a game, especially, part of it, I do think there I want to see her be able to play through some mistakes. And particularly, I do think, like, she helps the Storm
She
because
has
she
to
is,
play to be able to play through the mistakes.
again, I that was a yes, but you understand. And I like, she's an agent of chaos. Like, what frustrated me is the Golden State game where they couldn't get anything going. And in those situations, Noel Quinn tends to rely on our veterans. But it's like, if they're not performing, let's throw out the player who you might get anything from her. You might get 11 points in 10 minutes. You might get two defensive breakdowns. But if you give them the defensive breakdowns, oh well, you're already down 20 points. You just see what might happen. The Atlanta game, I get that was a tense road game against a team that's very close to you in the standings. She came in and it really just did not look good in that one. Had two turnovers in 2 minutes. Got beaten at the defensive end and then was never seen again in the second
But
half. I get
this
that,
is
but
not
you,
like a this is not Emerson Hancock where we're trying to figure out this is the second pick in the draft.
I agree.
And
I
this is
mean,
somebody whose potential is massive. You give her the opportunity to figure it out. And right now, even I'm so mad that I didn't watch this game because I would have been going nuts having been watching it.
I guess I didn't get the chance to fully explain my argument, which is that, I have found evidence in the NBA that this whole idea that players develop more with more minutes is not actually true. That if you look at players, the way I sorted it to try to, like, because usually better players get more minutes, obviously, was to sort out draft picks who went to teams with unusually good records for their pick or unusually bad records for their pick in the first round. And the team players that went to teams with unusually bad records obviously played more in year one. But if you looked at it, by year two, it was about the same. And by year three, the players who had gone to unusually good teams were actually playing more minutes because they were developing. It's hard to tease out causality here, but presumably because they had to earn their minutes in a way that the teams, players that went to weak teams, were kind of just, got on scholarship, essentially getting those minutes, and that it did benefit the players who had to earn it. So I think there is an element of that that is going to be positive for
But there's
Dominic
also sort
Wilkins
of like
long term.
organizational success that certain organizations are better at developing players than others. And the ones who are already bad are probably going to be worse at developing players.
I don't know. I think it's very hard to tell that because you just don't develop enough players to really
There,
have a
but
sample
there
size.
are organizations that have just been consistently bad and they've
And by the
continued to
way,
draft players.
it's not like the Storm have developed that many players in the
But they're,
past 10 years.
I mean, they haven't had the op, they've been too good to.
Exactly, but
They're
it's hard to say that they're good at developing players when it's basically just Ezzie Magbegor. And they played a bunch of young players in 2023 when they were in that situation where they were unusually bad for their draft pick. And Jordan Horstin had a nice second season. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see her development this year. But all the other rookies from that team are gone.
I think she's just a good enough player to be on the court right now.
I agree.
Even necessarily about development. The other pieces.
The point, my argument is more that I think Dominique Belonga needs to earn it with her play.
Okay, sure, but she just earned it right there.
It's okay to bench her if she is making mistakes.
Fine. NECA is not young. Skylar Diggins is not young. Like, this, how old is Gabby Williams? Isn't young either. Right?
She's not young, but she's right in her prime.
This team is going to need Dom is those the future. Minutes down
I agree.
The road.
Yeah.
But they're also, and it's a long season. We're 19 games in.
I know, I agree with that.
They're going to need those minutes. If NECA's out all of a sudden, or Ezzie's out, she's not going to have the opportunity to earn those minutes because she's going to have to play. And it would be better now to take the preventative measures to develop her, get her time on the court, have her figure out.
But that's what
out.
I'm saying is that I don't think playing minutes is actually how you develop.
But
sometimes going to the
also
bench
is
and
saving
seeing
minutes from those other players.
That I think is a fair point. And Neko Gumke, even in this one, played 35 minutes as to Skylar Diggins.
Exactly.
So, especially you've got a little stretch here where the Storm play. So that Wednesday AM game in Connecticut, then both teams turn around and fly across the country and play again in Seattle on Friday night. Then the Storm play on Sunday. So three games in 5 days with a cross country trip in the middle of them.
I'm not that worried that Malonga is going to be a bust at this point.
Oh no, no, I wouldn't say that's a concern at all.
I don't think they need to coddle her. I think this is just something Noel Quinn is just falling back on habits. And players that she knows a little bit better, you can rely on. I get it. I understand that as a coach and the thing that you're saying about earning it. But like those situations when, like you were saying, when you need something, also, if it's in a blowout, like there should be minutes there, but she needs to play competitive minutes as well. And I think that's what this game is. And the most important piece of it, it's those points. And obviously this is a team effort. It's 4 of 17 shooting from Breonna Stewart, who maybe she's not able to play with not as elite level talent around her. This is one of the worst games of the season for her.
Right? She had the worst net points. My ESPN colleague Dean Oliver posted by his metric of any player on Sunday.
You give credit to a lot of people here at the same time, but Malonga deserves a lot of that credit. And
yeah, I'm not sure how many of those shots she was the primary defender on.
It's about
but
being in the paint too, though. About having that size in the paint. It is a huge deal. This was an important moment for the Storm overall. For the season, obviously, going in, beating the Liberty on the road. But Malonga having that kind of game, like, it was the first moment we're witnessing something here.
I hope so. So, another little bit of WNBA news. The Portland WNBA team will announce its name next Tuesday. Sean Heiken has reported that they are going to bring back, resurrect the Fire name that they used during their first 3 years of existence from 2000 to 2002. So we could have the return of the Storm Fire I-5 rivalry.
Wait, so they're announcing it, but we already know?
Well, he's reported that. Like, it's not official.
I don't think we have that much else, but I do have to leave in 6 minutes, so.
Well, the only other thing I had on my list was that the UW football landed a commitment from four-star running back Brian Bonner Jr. from Valencia, California on Tuesday.
Hello.
I don't know if you wanted to talk about this one.
What I want to talk about? Yes, I want to talk a lot about Brian Bonner
No,
Jr.
just that it was a big-time recruiting win for them. And at a position where, you know, obviously they have Adam Muhammad, they have a number of young running backs coming in this year, but you know you're going to lose Jonah Coleman after this season. So to add a big time talent at that position is exciting.
It's more to me like I will believe this when he's on campus.
I agree with that. I don't know. I just thought this might be big enough that you were going to mention it. So I put it in my notes.
We don't need to worry. Here's the thing about recruiting. We don't need to think about recruiting right now. I mean, Jed Fish should be thinking about recruiting, but
I agree that Jed Fish should be recruiting.
There are two pieces that are happening for the team success next season is going to help them with recruiting. And Damon Williams is going to help them with recruiting. What they need to do is do everything that they can to make everybody in the building as happy as possible. So I think that is going to be more important. They've got the budget to be able to go out and sign players long-term. And at this point, like, we haven't seen UW's recruiting prowess be fully on display because it's still so early in the process. But when they have the combination of Jed's ability to recruit, which is phenomenal, Jed is a phenomenal recruiter, that plus demand, plus the budget, all of a sudden, like, we're going to be talking about very big classes from UW and big transfer classes as well. So I'll be more excited as we get a little bit closer, but I have never been more confident about UW football.
Never.
Never.
In 1991, you were like, I don't know. Eventually, this Pac-10 might break up.
We had a coach before this. Chris Peterson is the only other person who I felt more confident. We have a coach right now who I am most convinced.
Kalen DeBoer lost 3 games during his 2 seasons at Washington. Went 3-0 against Oregon.
I will never forget. There were a lot of close games. The games Cam Ward should have beaten UW.
As a reminder, his daughter is the star player on the UW softball team.
He just wasn't able to go out and do the things. He wasn't able to bring the players in. He brought in Michael Penix, who I don't think he recruited. He was able to do with other people's players. Jed brings the players to the
house. You don't think that Kalen DeBoer like recruited him to Indiana?
Yeah, did he?
No, he didn't.
He's like given.
But he recruited him to UW.
Whatever.
Okay.
Jed does it all. Jed does the things.
I mean, let's see Jed win the close games. Let's see that. I'm excited about Jed Fish too. I will be here by myself saying respect Kalen DeBoer's time at UW.
I would be very fascinated to see Chris Peterson in a modern college football environment. I'm not sure how well it would go.
I think that Chris Peterson would find a way to win in whatever environment. It just, I don't think it would bring him the satisfaction way, which is why he's not currently coaching college football and he is currently broadcasting.
He saw the writing on the wall of what was coming, but I feel in very safe hands. So yeah, Brian Bonner Jr. Great, but there's going to be way more.
You could say the same about the podcast after we do the sign off, quote unquote.
There's going to be way more.
Sports. On that note, I mean, we're going to talk about some sports.
52 weeks plus.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. I was telling Killian, people really love these takes. You know what I mean? Of course, they love them. And I was like, imagine every single one of these takes being written with ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton chatting you hello while you're doing it. Every single time.
Well, you don't ever give any update. Hello? I agree that I took longer than I thought I was.
That's
going
I was
to.
Like, should I hit him with a hello? Kaylin's like, yeah, do it.
I have to make twice as many. I had all my stuff downstairs and have to make twice as many trips now because I only have one hand.
Are you going to explain to people why you're one-handed?
I have a broken thumb.
Wow. Firework incident.
I wish it were that. I slammed my thumb in a car door and broke it. So that's great. It was a very fun weekend.
So the 4th of July, these neighbor kids were playing Roman Candle baseball for like a long time and they kept getting hit. And I walked over and I was like, Detroiters? And they were like, you've seen this, right? On Detroiters, they play Roman Candle baseball.
I've forgotten that. I watched all of Detroiters.
It's like one of the most iconic scenes. But also, he's talking about how they just integrated Roman Candle baseball. And I feel like it's always the funny. Old baseball is the funniest thing to me of all time. But anyway, so I asked the kids, and I was like, Detroiters? They were like, what the fuck are you talking about, sir? And I was like, all right, never mind me, old man over here. It's like a thing that children are doing is playing Roman Candle baseball. I like looked it up on TikTok and it's happening quite a bit. I still wonder if Detroiters deserve some credit.
Oh, it had to have inspired it way back. But yes, the odds that the kids, were firing up, really getting the jokes about the 1990s Detroit in the spring in the D or whatever.
Kids should love Detroiters. Anyway, yeah, they were like, they hit a couple. There's like ones of the Roman Candles that crackle and then it's just like fire in your face. It was pretty terrifying. All the adults were very scared. They kept being like, Luca, come over. And I was like, part of me was like, I kind of want him to. And because all these kids are like sophomores to seniors in high school or beyond. And part of me was like, don't do this, you'll catch on fire. But also, you know, it's like, you got to kind of fit in a little bit here. Go over there, light yourself on fire like the boys. that's an Eliza McClam reference nobody will get for a few weeks. Also, then we watched Homer at the Bat, and we watched on July 3rd, the summer of 4'2", The Simpsons. Literally the greatest. I referenced this when I was inviting the neighbors over, and I was like, what better way to celebrate the independence of your country than blowing up a small part of it? and I feel like nobody understood what I was talking about. They were like, well, this person really likes fireworks. Which I feel like really liking fireworks is probably a personality flaw at this point. But then we were watching Homer at the Bat. And to me, the funniest thing on earth is people talking about old timey baseball. I'm afraid all those players have retired and passed on. In fact, your right fielder has been dead for 130 years. It's the funniest quote of all time. Like, the episode is good, but that is by far the best part when he unveils his ringers. Honus Wagner, Cap Anson, Mordecai Three Fingers Brown. Also, just the nicknames, too, the old-timey nicknames.
Oh, they
amazing.
Don't make nicknames like they used to. Big like, Dumper is, in many ways, a throwback nickname.
I think Big Dumper is pretty good. It's like...
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like it's good players, enough that it would have worked in early 20th century baseball.
They're all in the all-time don't look at their Wikipedia page.
Oh no.
Players, we were joking about that. About these baseball players staunchly against integration and stuff. It's like every time you go to any of their Wikipedias, you're just like, we don't want to know Tris Speaker's thoughts on anything.
maybe his thoughts on the name Tristan, but that's about it.
He's Tristram.
Correct.
I don't claim him. We don't claim Tristrams.
Wow, you're that small tent of a Tristan.
Oh, I don't even claim Tristins.
So you don't count.
Anybody with an O, an E.
Top Chef spoiler alert. Skip ahead if you haven't watched this season. You don't count the winner of this season, Tristan.
The integrated baseball. The American leagues, the National leagues, the Negro leagues.
I look forward to you calling back to this.
It's one of the funniest parts of our sordid American past. There's what is the person's name? Tristan spelled wrong?
With an E, yes. So.
Somebody I had to correct on liner notes for a record. Somebody misspelled my last name.
How did they spell it?
With an A.
That's what I think. K-C-A-R-A-S-I-N-O?
Yeah, because I'm just like, some people are like, you're Carasino. And I'm like, I don't know if I am. I think it just depends on what the next word is.
Like how you pronounce it?
Yeah, it's Tristan Carasino or Tristan Carasino. I'm fine with either.
Yeah, our family definitely has a tendency to pronounce it Carasino.
Chris Carasino and Katie Carasino. Siblings. Somehow their last name's spelled differently. Or pronounced differently.
That's the name word preceding it, not the word after.
Yes, yes, the word preceding it, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the word after it might change things, too.
Because it's the Carasino Olympics.
Chris Carasino is staunchly against integration. No.
Oh, no. We better turn off the AI transcript on that
one. Don't Google Katie Carasino.
Oh. The Pelton cast MVP would never.
I think I did that. Did I do that wrong? Katie Carasino, Chris Carasino. See, it's literally, I don't even know what what is right in my head.
You can't even keep your imagined things straight, yes?
The only thing I can keep straight are their thoughts on baseball.
I was watching a lot of Seinfeld over the weekend.
Watched every episode, every single one.
Okay. I mean, I've also seen every single episode, but there are some I'm less familiar with when we go back and rewatch them than others. And, you know, one of the things is, like, people will complain about the post-Larry David Seinfeld seasons, like, oh, these storylines got too ridiculous. And I'm like, guys, have you seen some of the Larry David season storylines? They're pretty ridiculous in their own right. I love them. It's amazing. It's great how they all intersect at the end, but they are still quite ridiculous. That was my takeaway.
Your takeaway is wrong, and you're bad.
Okay.
Season 9 is not unwatchable, but like the or sorry, season 8? Season 8, right? I gotta pull this
I
up.
thought it
Hold
was
on.
season 9, but I guess
It was season 9 off the top of my head.
it depends.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, it's season 9. Okay, I was right
Yeah.
about that. Season 9 is not unwatchable, but it's not far off. Like seasons 1 through 7 are. I've been listening to this audiobook. I think I said that the Simpsons
Yes.
audiobook, and they talk about the jump the shark moment on the Simpsons. And I was thinking about it
Wait,
as
what
it
is it?
pertains to the Pelton cast. It's the one where it's called The Principal and the Pauper, where Seymour is like he's not the person he says he was. He goes to the Vietnam War and comes back. His name's like Armin Tanzarian or something. And people kind of pointed that as the moment. You could definitely feel it if you're watching straight through. And when I was watching Seinfeld, I was like, because season one is like so grounded, you know? One and two are so grounded. I think my take last week was that season three is really underrated, right? I think
Well,
season three is maybe just as good as season four.
and season four is considered the peak, right?
Yes, season four is like the season where they do the show within the show. That's
Yes.
kind of like
Which is
the
one of the ones
classic.
that I didn't wasn't super familiar with and have it was not over the weekend, but have rewatched recently.
Which one? The finale of that season?
Yeah.
That's a you problem.
I agree it's a me problem, but it's just like one of those things where, for most of my life, I wasn't picking and choosing which Seinfeld episodes to watch. It was just whatever came on the syndication for me.
That was the take that so Bill Oakley is talking about it, and he was like, these episodes that are now classics, they weren't classics when they came. Frank Grimes wasn't a classic when it came out. It was just a show. And it's about basically like
So
over time.
now, do you feel like, because with Conan, there were definitely sketches where it's like, oh, I know this is classic, even though there's no way for me to view this again. I just have to tell other people about this.
Yes.
Like, without
What is
question,
your argument here?
the
It's the
Clive.
same thing.
But no,
Are
like
you
when we
saying
watched the Clive Clemens Inappropriate Response Channel, we knew in the moment this
that
is
that
the
was a
most
classic?
hilarious thing we've ever seen, even though there was no way to go back and revisit it for many, many years.
I think maybe a late night talk show is different than an episodic TV show because so much of the show is just like you're not gonna have classic like interview or whatever, you know,
Right.
classic Paul Westerberg performance or something. But the so much of Conan is boring, I guess is what I'm saying. But so much of The
Don't know if it's
Simpsons,
boring so much as it's interchangeable.
but so much of The Simpsons was like consistently phenomenal. And then it got to a point where it wasn't. And then you look back on, I'm sure like Seinfeld, it was just like, this is a great show. People were just like, this is a good show to watch. I enjoy watching it. And then over time, like the lore kind of builds up.
I would say Festivus was another one. We knew in the moment. Like, I don't know that we knew in the moment that we're going to be making references to this, 27 years later, but I think we had a pretty good idea.
It is funny. So season 9, like that's probably the season I remember watching on TV the most
I mean,
because it
just
was
given your
the
age,
oldest.
yeah. Because you had just turned 13 when the finale aired?
I
Or
was
were just
12.
about to turn 13?
Yes.
Okay.
But it is like the syndication thing kind of like changes it. Now streaming or whatever. Like honestly, I think streaming makes it stand out more because if you're just watching, oh, like subtle changes in a show getting worse is something that you can't exactly tell necessarily if it's like when your children age and you're
Yes.
like you can't tell like that your children look different unless you haven't seen them for a long period of time. This is the thing I was explaining to children about how everything is relative. So like the way that we perceive something is always based upon judging it vis-a-vis something else. So if you're watching The Simpsons and every single episode is great, you're just like, that was just a good episode of The Simpsons. Now the worst episode ever of The Simpsons would be the best episode ever of The Simpsons. Or the best episode of the last 20 years of The Simpsons. Because of it being relative. Anyway, what I was thinking about when I was reading this was Bill Oakley is talking about how they were like, we don't owe you anything. Don't you owe them for the show and the worst episode ever episode. Bart is like, don't, this is Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie. Don't you owe them for giving you this much free entertainment? And I was thinking about the Pelton cast.
Oh, of course you were. Wow.
And I was like, well, I'm out here.
We're doing you a favor.
We're doing you a favor. I'm out here 50 plus episodes per year, right? There's like 51 weekly episodes per year, maybe 52, because I feel like we've stopped our Pelton cast by week. We're just like, we got to podcast through it. The Storm are too important. The Mariners are too important to us.
I mean, the Mariners actually being relevant to the podcast has changed the timing considerably. And the Storm are high up there now, too.
Mariners hot takes week after week, wow, cranked out just as phenomenal as they've ever been. Many are saying even better, even stronger than they were before.
I mean, I guess the MVP vote is evidence of that.
If you look around and you look at the early Mariners hot takes, they're a lot like early seasons of Seinfeld. We haven't quite figured out the format yet.
There's a lot more me in there.
Is there really?
Yeah.
Well, I think the fans have demanded less of you.
I'm agreeing that means we figured it out.
I don't know how many years we are on of Mariners hot takes. What year did we start it? Like 2000 and...
All right, let me go.
18, 17?
Give me a second here. You got to fill. You could just throw a question out there. And
I can't believe you didn't know this instantly. Anyway, I was thinking about that, about how the Mariners hot takes just keep getting better.
They keep
throughout
getting,
time.
Do they keep getting hotter? I guess they're not necessarily getting hotter.
I think they're less hot. But the thing is, the hotness of the takes. And a hot take is such a stupid thing because a hot take is just saying the opposite of conventional wisdom. Does that make sense?
I suppose so.
Like, when they're like, oh, wow, Stephen A. Smith with a hot take. He said LeBron's not good. And it's just like, all right, cool.
I mean, I've been thinking
about
this.
The real good take makers are able to weave a take and tell a story about something, not just be like, that thing you thought was good, it's not. You
you're
know what I mean? Like, anybody could do that.
Stephen A. Smith can't weave a story?
No, I'm saying Stephen A. Smith can, and that's the difference between him and maybe somebody else, right?
Correct.
Obviously, somebody not employed by ESPN.
No, we're not allowed to say anything negative about them either. But I understand what you're saying. Yes, someone that aggregators would say is delivering a hot take, but actually is not. There's no craft. There's no art to it.
That's the thing. It's the story that matters. It's not the like, oh, he said that thing I thought was good is bad. Whoa.
Wow. All right, I'm still scrolling back in the archives.
Wow, you are going deep in the archives. I also looked at the
pre-pandemic, obviously. Oh, I was going to talk about the old-timey Mariners. Last night, since there was no Mariners game, there was really very little sports on TV. So I had it on Root Sports, and they were replaying games from 2001. There was, I believe, Ichiro's...
Not a fan.
MLB
no interest.
Debut against the A's. It certainly was his first career hit.
Season
home,
9 of Seinfeld for me.
Not the game where he threw out Terrence Long and really made his name. They also played their first game against the Rangers after A-Rod had signed there at the ballpark in Arlington, not A-Rod's return to Seattle. But and what stood out to me, besides for the fact that Rick Riz was calling games on the TV, it was very jarring to hear.
Is that weird? Because I feel like, I don't know why Rick Riz was sent off, why he was demoted to just radio.
He wasn't. I think Rick Riz loves radio.
He just prefers radio.
Yeah, and I mean, part of the issue back then was that Dave Niehaus also loved radio, so they had to trade off.
They are like old school radio guys.
Yeah. I mean, radio is like real broadcasting.
Brian Ruland Smith could never.
I mean, that's not his job. Okay, I may have gone past the actual
hot
takes.
He was talking about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. He was like, I actually thought it was pretty funny when he was like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa came over and just like thanked me for my service or whatever. I kind of like when they're fucking around. They're having a good time. But
Of
it is
course.
baseball is the sport that I like obviously listen to the most on the radio.
Anyways, the other thing that stood out here was that there was this play in the bottom of the eighth tie game. Mariners have runners on second and third, nobody out. Let's see, who was the two-hole hitter at this point? Mike Cameron hits a fly ball to like short center field to Terrence Long and whoever the third base coach was at the time, I was not even memorable enough for me to remember his name 24 hours later.
It wasn't Sam
Doesn't send
Perlato.
it was post Sam Perlazzo. You know I would remember my boy Sam
It
Perlazzo.
was post him. What year? Because to me, Sam Perlato was the Mariners' third base coach through like 2010.
No, he did not stick out the entire
I
Lou
couldn't even
Piniella
tell you who
era.
their third base coach is now.
I didn't
Damn.
really their third base coach? No, I
I know Eric
really
Young, of course, but.
right. I'd have to think about it for a little bit. Anyways, Lou Piniella seemed furious in the dugout that they did not send the runner. It was very amusing to see like a manager so upset at his own base coach.
I like that.
And they were like actively calling him out on the broadcast. It did work out later. John Olerud successfully hit a sac fly after Edgar Martinez was intentionally walked. So, and the Mariners did
Christopher
win the game.
Negron. This is his first season as third base coach.
But he Negron previously was first base coach, I believe.
Oh, okay.
That's why, he's not new to the coaching staff. So there you go. That was my Mariners 2001 observation.
It is such a funny job to have, specifically third and first base coach.
I'd be really impressive if you were coaching both first and
No, but
third.
just like they're funny jobs to have.
I mean, I'm not disputing that. Yeah.
That you just go out there and you coach a base, tell people when to run,
It
maybe
seems that,
parkour.
okay, I can't really tell this from the archive, but it seems I should be able to figure this out from when we started doing, well, no, the Takes Hot is saved more recently. That's from 2001, 21. So that's definitely not when we started doing hot takes. All right. Keep filling here.
the well, I mean, that's this is almost podcast material, but it is the thing that I hate the most about Dan Wilson. Among, I think Dan Wilson is probably mostly irrelevant, and the minor differences do matter throughout the course of the season, but it's like not that much. But
Oh, wow.
the
Okay. These, no, they do date back to 2017.
wow, we're coming for you, Simpsons. We are coming for you.
April 11th, 2017 is the first time it's listed on Twitter.
So this is over 8 years.
Correct. This would be the ninth season of Mariners Hot Takes.
9 years. Let's see.
Seasons. Not years. Seasons.
We did some during the off season.
They go back as far as the search for Seattle's best food, it appears.
Really? We've been doing this that long? I feel like we just started. I feel
The podcast is
old.
search.
The search. Oh yeah, no. So season nine was literally the first two episodes of season nine are probably like they're not my least favorite, but they're like I remember watching them in the moment as a 14-year-old, no, 12-year-old, I guess, and just being like, yeah, this sucks. The City of New York versus Homer Simpson, I was like, I might be done with the show forever. I thought that almost 30 years before the show went off the air. And then the very next episode is The Principal and the Pauper. The one that I was talking about that people are kind of like jump the shark moment. There are
Okay.
some good episodes. The Bart Starr episode. But it does get a little bit worse. In fact, it gets a lot worse in season nine, I will have to say. There are a few classics in here. Anyway, I'm here to say the Pelton cast is stronger and more consistent than The Simpsons' first 9 seasons.
Oh boy.
Season nine, Seinfeld's unwatchable. Simpsons is unwatchable. It's us in Love Island, baby.
You've truly never heard this here first. I think this actually is a hot take.
Okay, so Dan Wilson never gets mad. Like one of the jobs of being manager, you've got two options as manager. How about this? You can either be stats guy, analytics guy, or you could be old school guy. You can't be neither. And that's what Dan Wilson is right now. Dan Wilson is neither angry old school guy, nor is he new stats guy. He's kind of just there guy. He does a lot of, we're not going to challenge. That's it. He doesn't even steal anymore. Who are you, Dan?
I guess it's true. They're not stealing near as much. You know what he does do, though?
What?
Bunt. That's the other third observation from the Mariners in 2001. They had Brett Boone sacrifice bunt at one
point.
He had
like 50 homers that year. They're like,
yeah, he had 149 RBI.
That's hilarious.
I mean, it was the start of the year. Nobody knew that Brett Boone was, you know, his performance was going to be enhanced the way that it was compared to previous seasons. No one knew.
He was, you understand what I'm saying about Dan, though? Be old school. You literally were training under Lou Piniella. But that's like, but it's what fans want. It's what players want. Players are never going to be
that
like,
I agree that it's what players want.
They're like, oh, my manager stood up for me too much. If there is a call, I guarantee you this, because everybody feels this way. I know how human beings feel. When you're mad about something, you want somebody else. If somebody fucks you over and your boss is like, no, you can't fuck over ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton, it's just not a thing that you're dealing with that much. But like, you want to know that your bosses have your back in that situation. And that's what it is to baseball players. They need somebody to be like, this was a horrible call.
You know who I think knows what
when Julio struck out
more than
no, that's not it.
Tristan Garcia.
That is not it. I do not agree with you on this. There are times, I remember when I learned this, where it's like, oh, politicians, many times I'm smarter than them. Right?
I'm not disputing that. I'm saying, you know who knows what baseball players want better?
No, I think Dan Wilson, no, Dan Wilson, I guarantee you, is a baseball players don't know what they want, but I know what they need type of manager.
Dan Wilson is doing them a favor?
Yeah. You know that he is. I worked myself up into a take.
Well, that was a bonus take.
I feel like we're doing too much of the post-episode talk, though. Is this a time of year thing? People are getting a little too used to this. We have to tell the people what they want for the Pelton cast.
Oh, no.
They don't tell us. Because this could be the whole podcast, but then what are we? We're just like any other podcast. You know what I mean?
As opposed to now?
No, now we have a focus. We have a North Star. We've got the rundown.
Okay. I think we've just got timestamps. That's all we have, Chief.
It is different than just like two white guys hanging out podcast.
I mean, I suppose that's true.
This has gone on too long.
All right, we'll cut it off here. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for nothing.